All right, everybody, welcome back to Place in the Conversation. We're very glad to have you join us today. And today, the conversation that we're making a place for has to do with the relationship between spirituality and science. And for many, many years, there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of conversation about how do you balance, or is it possible to balance the world of spirituality and of faith with reason and with science, or does one have to choose one or the other? And so today we're very blessed to have two people with us who are both great scientists. They come from a deep science background, and they also have unique spiritual journeys, and they are their own spiritual journeys, faith journeys, and they have handled that relationship between faith and science in different kind of ways. And so this is one of those podcasts where I'm going to kind of set things up, and then you're not going to hear a whole lot from me, because I really want to hear from our two guests. And so one of them is very familiar to you, Nick Everhart, who is with me for most of the podcast. Nick is a scientist. He's going to share a little bit of his background. And then we're very glad to welcome with us Dr. Christopher Wells. Chris is a board member of A Place in the Conversation, a good friend, and we've had a lot of great conversations in the past. So guys, welcome to A Place in the Conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you, Dan.
Good to be here.
So, Nick, why don't you go ahead and share a little bit of your science background so everybody understands, I guess, on a deeper kind of level who you are from that.
So you want me to focus at this point on my science background and not my spiritual / religious background?
Yeah, why don't we start there, understand each other's science background, and then we'll start to talk about how you balance the two.
So I have a PhD in zoology from University of California at Berkeley. And within the broader field of zoology, I was specializing in cell biology. And I left Berkeley and went to Boulder and did a 3-year postdoc in cell and molecular biology at the University of Colorado. And then I went to work at DuPont as a scientist doing basic research. In those days, DuPont actually funded some very good basic research. A couple of Nobel Prize winners came out of that program, a number of members of the National Academy. They don't do that anymore. And so that's sort of my scientific background, I guess. In a short period of time, I published I have 8 to 10 papers in about a 3-year period. And then I pretty much left the lab shortly thereafter and pursued a career in marketing and other sorts of things unrelated.
So Nick, what drew you to the world of science?
Well, I tell you, I was a pre-med in college, and I was taking a course in cell biology, and I was looking through the microscope, and I saw cells dividing. And I thought, that's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I saw diagrams of it in books, but when I actually saw it happening, it captivated me. I wanted to understand more about biology, about life.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
At that time, a fairly basic level.
Yeah. Fantastic. Thank you. Yeah. Chris, how about you? What's your science background?
Yeah, I did a PhD at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, lived there for 5 years while I was doing that. PhD was in high energy theoretical physics, so nothing so tangible or practical as what Nick did. I studied under Raman Sundaram, who at the time was one of the most cited physicists in the world, so... You know, you said I had a great science background. At one time I had a mediocre science background, but I hung around with some really, really amazing people. Yeah. In fact, I graded papers for Chuck Bennett, who's won all kinds of prizes for discovering the cosmic microwave background. And so anyway, I studied primarily the earliest moments of our universe. I looked at the inflationary cosmology. I looked at it in the context of what at the time were very popular frameworks for understanding the universe, which were extra-dimensional models. So if you think of our universe as being three dimensions of space and one dimension of time, these models all had extra dimensions of space with interesting geometries and things like that. And the reason to do that is it helps you to understand some of the things that are hard to fit to observations that we see of the early universe, which, you know, you were talking about cell biology and watching cells divide. The fact that we can say intelligent things about, you know, the first 100,000 years of a 13 billion year old universe is pretty captivating as well. I also studied dark matter, wrote a few papers on dark matter. We know that there's something out there that looks like matter that holds galaxies together. We don't know a whole lot more than that. And so I spent a bunch of my time thinking about what it might be, and if it does look like that, could you actually see it in a laboratory and things like that. I also did some collider physics. The Large Hadron Collider was getting ready to turn on while I was in grad school, and everyone was super excited about it. None of that stuff ended up being interesting enough to publish, which I think is, that's one of the pitfalls of science, right? The things that fail, you never get to publish, even though you learn something. And I always told my students the stack of things that got published was about 10 times smaller than the stack of things that I tried and they didn't work.
Right.
And I just, before I wrap this up, I just wanted to say one of the things that really resonated with me, Nick, about what you were saying is that you went into cell biology because you saw something amazing and you wanted to know more about it. And I think for a long time, there's been this perception that scientists do science because, you know, well, we'll discover the next technology or something that changes the world. And to a person, every scientist I've ever worked with in any close way, they're doing it because they just think it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. It's captivating. A lot of the people I worked with, they were almost more like artists than they were, you know, your typical laboratory scientist, you know, at least the stereotype of what we think of. So anyway, that really resonated with me, and I wanted to double click on it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. And so, guys, I know. Thank you for sharing that, you know, that piece and part of you, so that we can, you know, that we can understand that. And then, you know, for years there's been this, you know, how do faith and science interact, and how do those two things come together? Is it possible for faith and science to come together? To talk about your faith for a little bit. What is your understanding of faith? What is your understanding of who God is? And how does your understanding of science, how does that weave in together?
Well, I'll take that hot potato first. You know, my faith background is, I don't know, it's kind of stereotypical in a lot of ways. I prayed the quote-unquote sinner's prayer for the first time when I was 6 years old. I grew up United Methodist, and missions was a big thing, and we had this missionary from China come over, and she was this big, gregarious lady named Debbie Waltz, and she played the accordion, and I'll never forget that as long as I live. And I remember it was the last night of the conference, and I was in first grade, and she was singing these songs, and she was so full of joy. Like, as happy as I am playing music during church, I don't know if I'll ever be as happy as she was playing that squeeze box. But she invited us to pray this prayer and invite Jesus into our hearts. And I remember thinking very distinctly, I don't know exactly what that means, but whatever that lady has, I want that for myself. And you know, so that's 33 years ago, and I think the last 33 years have been me trying to understand what it was that I signed up for on that night. And so, what does it mean to believe something? What does it mean? I'm a firm believer that with faith comes doubt. Like, you can't, they are the yin and the yang to one another. And if you're gonna say, I believe this, even though I don't, you know, I can't prove it empirically, the doubt comes along with that. And I am, part of the reason I was okay as a scientist is that I am naturally very skeptical, and I ask a lot of questions, and I want to understand the why of something before I can sort of sign off on it. And so I take a lot of comfort in the story in the Gospels you know, where Jesus welcomes Thomas to him and says, he never condemns Thomas once, right? Thomas doubts. He was telling the other disciples, I'll believe it when I see it, when I can put my hands in his side and touch the holes in his hands. And Jesus didn't condemn a lot of people, and one of the people he never condemned was Thomas. And doubt is not something we should feel bad about, as long as we turn that doubt into pursuit of truth. Go find the truth. Use that as motivation. And so that's been a lot of my faith journey, is just not being sure and then trying to get certainty wherever I can find it.
Thank you.
I don't know where to begin.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I was brought up in the church. I went to church, you know, every Sunday, to Sunday school and church. I went to youth fellowship. I stopped going to church when I was in college. I came back to the church around the time I got married, because my wife was very involved in the church, wanted to go to church. I came to the First Baptist shortly after we came back to Kennett Square. After a while, I was baptized again as an adult. It was something, I really believed in it at that time. It was like a very sincere thing. The story you mentioned about me going out in the backyard and, you know, having this experience that, okay, you know, I want to be saved. Mm-hmm. You know? I thought it was going to be the answer to a lot of questions in my life. I guess I would say, in retrospect, it wasn't, okay? It didn't give me what I was looking for. I was very active in this church. I was a moderator at one time. I was the chairman of the deacons. I was probably chairman of deacons when you came here. I just got farther and farther away from my faith. Mm. And you and I have talked about it. I thought it was interesting that you introduced this conversation about science and spirituality, and you didn't say science and religion. Yeah. Okay, because I have a real problem with religion.
Same.
But and this is sort of a cliche that some people have a problem with, but I would say, well, I'm a spiritual person, but I'm not a religious person. Okay, well, what does that mean? Well, let's talk about my beliefs. At a very fundamental level, I believe that everything is connected, and there sort of have to be. If you believe in the origins of the universe, as Chris said that he worked on it, you have to believe that everything is connected. And certainly, I think that's true in the cosmos. I think it's also true here on Earth. And so I believe that if everything's connected, you should care about everything. Okay, and I try to live that way. As far as Jesus, I have to be, you said, speak the truth. My truth is that I think Jesus was a wonderful, charismatic person, a great teacher, but there's a lot of stuff with Christian doctrine that I have trouble accepting.
Okay? Sure.
As for God, I don't want to tell you I don't believe in God, but I would say, and I've said this to you many times, depends on how you define God, okay? I don't think God is some guy up in the sky. I don't necessarily believe that you can pray to God to change the course of events on Earth. Mm. So I guess I have a lot of, so faith is belief in something without proof. Okay.
Yeah.
Science is a study and observation of things and testing them against the evidence.
Yep.
So I believe that most everything that I have to encounter can be proved by science. Okay. However, there's a lot of things about science that are just like religion. I mean, I have a lot of questions about them. I wrote down a list of things that I have questions about, and you'll relate to this. Okay. What's a singularity? Okay.
Yeah.
What's dark matter?
Okay.
What is consciousness? What is quantum superposition? What is entanglement? Well, nobody knows. Okay. And so, as a scientist, you sort of have to take those things on faith. Okay? But for me, I don't need a God to explain the things that I believe in.
Interesting. I thought it was interesting you said you stopped going to church in college, and I kind of did too. And I went to a Christian college, and I'm not trying to skip the topics you mentioned there, but I really wanted to dig into this because the reason I stopped going is because I was so frustrated by how certain everyone around me was about their faith, mm-hmm. and it's madness. There are two categories. You believe something or you actually know something. And of course, there are shades of gray to knowing, right? Like you talked about testing the evidence. There are different levels of statistical proof that something, you took enough measurements or you didn't, you had outliers, you didn't, right? So there are shades of gray there. But they're two very different categories, believing something and knowing something. And the fact that I call Jesus Christ my Savior is a very different kind of fact than the Pythagorean theorem is true. And I think a lot of people confuse those categories on both sides of the faith and spirituality or religion divide, if there is such a divide. I'm not so certain.
You know, I stopped, we're all true confessions, right? I stopped going to church my freshman year of college as well, right? I mean, it was just, and the reason I stopped is because there wasn't somebody knocking on my door on Sunday morning telling me to get up and to go.
Yeah.
And the first Sunday morning I realized, hey, wait a minute, I don't have to go. This is on me.
Yeah.
And I'd rather sleep. And so I slept until I went home for Christmas break. And when I went home for Christmas break, I went, you know, there was the knock on the door. So, you know, no question, we're going. Yeah. And when I got to church, what I saw what I had missed. For months.
Was it Nancy?
No, it wasn't my wife. It was the community. Yes. It was the relationship. It was the support. It was all of that. And I realized, ooh, that's important to me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and if it's important to me here, it should be important to me other places, and I need to go. It's up to me to find that. Like, I need to work at that. It's not just going to happen, and I need to find the people that are going to be that for me. And it's interesting, Chris, to listen to you say, you know, I was frustrated by the people who were so sure of everything.
Yeah.
You know, the people in that faith community were 100% sure of everything, right?
Yeah.
And they're not the people I ended up with, right?
Interesting.
I ended up with people who were much more comfortable saying, yeah, you know what? This is what I believe. This is how the Spirit is alive and well and at work in my life today. But you know what? I have a whole lot of questions.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with the questions. I can be at peace with the questions.
Hearkening back to a topic we were discussing before we started this, I was raised in a household where I was taught that the universe was on the order of 6,000 years old, and I was like, maybe, I don't know. And then I got to college, and I never broached the topic of cosmology, and then I went to grad school, and it was like, okay, I'm going to work on collider physics. The guy I'm going to work with, that's mainly what he does, so I don't have to deal with that question. My first research meeting with my advisor, he comes in and he's like, hey, I want to understand the cosmic microwave background radiation, and we're going to research that. And I was like, ugh, I'm going to have to deal with this question. You know, and having been raised in a household where the Big Bang, you know, the whole Big Bang framework was strictly false.
I suppose evolution wasn't accepted.
Was not accepted either. And I had never really dealt with the question of what is the place of scientific thinking and what is the place of faith types of thinking and how do they intersect. And So I eventually, I read a little book by Richard Feynman, who's this very famous theoretical physicist, yeah. Right? And probably more famous for figuring out why the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded. But in this little book, and he was an avowed atheist, but not certainly not an unthinking one, he said there are why questions and there are how questions, and science answers the how questions very, very precisely, and philosophy, theology, spirituality, those are for the why questions. And that gave me permission at that point in my life, my mid-20s, to say, you know what, I don't have to be exactly sure how these things intersect. I can be just as certain that, you know, the cosmos started in a big fireball and that Genesis 1 is true, and I don't have to understand exactly how those two things line up.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep wrestling with them, and I still wrestle with them today, but yeah. I don't have to have an answer, and I can still be a functional human being.
Yeah.
That was an important moment for me.
Yeah. I tell you, there's this thing that I've been wrestling with recently, and it's that as people of faith, we ought to be really good at this, holding two very disparate ideas,
yep.
You know, and being able to live with attention.
Yep.
You know, like, because it's all the way through the history and the narrative and the foundation of the faith that we uphold and that we celebrate, and yet we struggle with it. And this is what I'm talking about. This is what I'm thinking about. It's like, you know, take somebody in the Old Testament like King David. You know, we talk about him as a man after God's own heart, and yet at the same time, he was an adulterer and a murderer.
Yeah, he was a real dirtbag.
Right? But the scriptures talk about him as a man after God's own heart, and they name the truth that, yeah, he was an adulterer and a murderer.
Yeah.
And we hold those two things to be true. And we, they're just, they seem to be competing ideas, but yet we should be okay with this. And you think about the Apostle Paul, you know, one of the most effective persecutors of the early church. And at the same time, one of the greatest missionaries that ever existed to spread the gospel of Jesus,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How do you hold those two things, you know, and at the same time, you know, if you want to take it to just right to the bedrock foundation of everything, you know, when we talk about the person of Jesus, we talk about him as dead, you know, as crucified, you know, dead and buried, and we also talk about him as resurrected. And I believe that in the core of my being, it shapes how I live and move through the world. But those two things, they are just desperate ideas that people look at and go, how in the world can that be true? It's like, well, you know what?
Yeah.
I can't explain it to you, you know, empirically, but I believe it to be true. And that ought to, as people of faith, like the whole foundation of our faith is built upon this idea of holding competing, differing ideas in tension,
yep.
And then being in relationship with each other and being able to say, hey, guess what? This is what I believe, this is what I think, but I got to give you space to hold what you believe, and I'm confident that in that space, the Spirit of God is going to work and move. It's not my job to convince you of anything.
Well, I don't think we're going to go down this road, but we could talk about non-duality,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
Good, yeah.
But I guess I was interested in what you said about what you were missing when you weren't going to church, mm-hmm. And it was the community. And I missed that, okay? But I didn't find it here at First Baptist,
yeah.
And I've told you that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm listening to the things that you say, and I know your background, and I think we could be part of the same community, but there's not a lot of people here that I ever felt that way about. And maybe I've just written them off because I'm somewhat of a judgmental person, okay?
I think that's our challenge, isn't it, Nick? I think it's like, because we get, like, we're very good at that, not there, not those people, right? And That's not the invitation, right?
Not Jesus.
It's not Jesus. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Right.
And that's the challenge.
Right. And I don't want to be that way. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I know. Right. I acknowledge
it. It's very natural.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah. It's very human. It's very human, right? And so that's just. Yeah, so any thoughts about that? You know, the balance. I mean, I really thank you guys for your conversation and for your stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the one other thing I would say is that faith and sort of spirituality, religion generally being in tension, that's a relatively recent phenomenon. You could point to the origins of it, you know, during the Enlightenment, perhaps. But even then, you know, you had had plenty of philosophers who still had sort of a dualist mindset, right? That there's more than just the visible world. I think for me, it really comes down to early 20th century, some of the, you know, was Bertrand Russell's book, Antichrist, which, by the way, brilliant man, ton of respect for the mathematics that he did, one of the silliest books ever written by an intellectual, because he basically tells you there's no such thing as the supernatural, and then goes on to prove that it's stupid to believe in the supernatural. It's a really dishonest book. At the same time, there's another book Russell's book was Why I Am Not a Christian. Nietzsche wrote Antichrist in the late 19th century, and Nietzsche's criticism is all practical criticisms of the church and the way the church has screwed things up. And it's, if you're a believer out there and you want to understand why people don't believe, read Nietzsche's book. It's a fantastic book to read to understand why someone might come to a different conclusion about the universe given the same facts that you have. But anyway, this is a relatively recent phenomenon, and it's, you know, I've never experienced real persecution, but what is that? When I was in grad school, I was the one guy that went to church on Sundays. I was a weirdo, and people were never mean to me. But there was definitely a why? What are you doing?
Why are you
wasting your time? And I think that's become, more fashionable nowadays. Is to think that people that believe that there's more than what you can touch and see. Have lost it,
yeah.
Frankly, for lack of a better way to phrase it.
Yeah. Yeah. Nick, you have any last thoughts?
No. So I didn't come in here expecting that we were going to have any kind of a debate, okay? for a variety of reasons. And I'm just interested in hearing what Chris had to say. I respect it. I guess in a way I wish I could be comfortable thinking that way. I feel like there's something missing in my life, but I don't know that that's it. So
I'll tell you what I tell every agnostic or atheist that I ever talk to about faith. And you can take this advice or you can leave it right here. Don't stop chasing truth.
Yeah.
Because if Jesus is the truth, you'll find him eventually.
Well, I haven't stopped. I guess you could describe me as a seeker.
There you go.
Okay,
yeah.
Because I read and think about this all the time.
Yeah.
Even though I might tell you I've made up my mind,
I'm
still interested in exploring it.
Yeah.
So.
And I ripped that advice off of Simone Weil, by the way. Yeah. That's not original to me.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Some of the best advice is borrowed advice.
Yeah.
So there's no doubt about that. And you know, Nick, that's one of the reasons why having conversations with you is so valuable for me. It personally is because of the constant seeking, and for everybody who's listening, I think that's wisdom, that's deep wisdom, right? Is not to be confident in what you believe, but be open to growing, to be open to maturing, to be open to the new thing that the Spirit might have to share with you. And one of the things that I think sometimes gets in our way is that we have past experiences, and some of them are traumatic, right? And there's no way around it. Some of the experiences that we've had in the past, whether it be in churches, whether it be in schools, whether it be in families, they're traumatic, and we do a lot of things to avoid going back and being hurt again, and And that's normal, and that's, you know, in some ways very healthy. But in another way, it kind of closes us off to the new thing that the Spirit might be doing. And so just Nick's advice there, or to constantly be a seeker, or Chris's advice to constantly be a seeker, just affirm that. And so as we close our time together here today, just may you always be open to experiencing the Spirit of God alive and well and at work in your world.
Amen. Yeah.